Welcome to the Beer Driven Devs podcast, where your hosts, Matt Goldman and Liam Elliott, share their experiences and passion for technology, software, and of course, beer. So be sure to grab yourselves a cold one and join them for this week's chat.
So, Monday went well.
Monday?
Yeah. Was it Monday? Tuesday.
Tuesday. Are you talking about Bubbles' second outing?
Yeah.
Yeah, not bad.
Yeah, I thought that went well.
Yeah, definitely some incremental improvements to Bubbles along the way. I've got some notes. I've got like more on the backlog now. There's a lot that we've learned over the two outings, and I think there's a lot to do, and we can make Bubbles like really quite cool, quite good actually.
Yeah, and by we you mean you and Bubbles, right?
Sure.
Like, I mean, I'm not going to try and claim any of the limelight here. I haven't done anything with Bubbles.
Bubbles is a beer-driven devs product, right?
Yet. No, I thought it was good. I'm still a bit dubious about the online meetup.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get why they do it, but it's also not the same.
I literally have no segue from that.
Well, it's your choice of topic, so I don't really have a segue. Although, did you see that link I sent you around the AFP arresting, I think, two people over in Perth?
No. What was that?
The AFP working with the FBI and someone else arrested two guys over in Perth. They're over a cybersecurity group. Combined total of 14 offences after executing search warrants in Perth. Police allege the men were part of a highly organised syndicate involved in large-scale cybercrime offending, including data intrusion, identity crime, and cryptocurrency-based money laundering.
Interesting. Well, I'll have to have a read through that.
I got no idea if this is anything related to what you said, because you said you wanted to talk about security.
Yeah, it's not
close
related
enough to
at all.
A segue.
Yeah, it's not at all related, but I did want to talk about something ostensibly about security, but then potentially a bit broader.
Yeah.
Let me start by asking you a question. What do you know about Auth?
I thought I knew enough, and then I sat down for a talk that someone titled, "What Do You Know About Auth?"
Yeah.
And I learned more, and then I think I forgot more about it.
I see.
Yeah. Well, so look, I know enough to basically say don't write your own.
Well, that's actually what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
Why do we say don't write your own? And I think this is broader than just Auth. But park that, because I want to come back to it, right? So let's talk about Auth just as a quick recap, right? So we know that you can go to a website and sign in, and the website's own internal logic, whatever that may be, will authenticate you. So we used to do that with something called Basic Auth, and that is where you would have literally credentials as headers in plain text as part of the HTTP request. So we don't do that anymore, right? So then we had forms-based Auth, and we do that because when you submit a form via an HTTP post, that can be encrypted, right? Because it can go over SSL.
Yep.
So that's pretty much why we do that, right? Now, of course, that's got a shelf life as well, which I'll come to in a bit, but passwords. Passwords have not been fit for purpose since ever.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not new. And you know, this is, that's not new. Like, that's something that the industry as a whole has been saying for decades.
Yep. Right?
It just so happens that over the past 10 years or so, people have been taking it more and more seriously. And over the past 5 years or so, passwordless auth is becoming commonplace. But that's a bit of an aside, and I'll come back to that, right? So you go to a website, you put in your username and password into a form. Form gets submitted via a post, and the website's internal logic authenticates you, however that may be.
Yep.
And then they can issue your browser a cookie.
Mm-hmm.
A cookie is effectively just a data payload. Once it's been issued by a website, the way that it works is it gets attached to all requests to that site. Mm-hmm. And that's how the back end knows who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
Now, this started to be a problem when we all moved to single page applications.
Yep.
Right? So the solution to that is to use OAuth and now OAuth 2. And wrapped around that is a bunch of standards that standard, because OAuth is not prescriptive. You have standards around that called OIDC, which makes it prescriptive. It gives you a standardized document, which is a JSON, just some JSON. It's called the discovery document at a well-known URL, which is literally prefixed with .well-known.
Yep.
And that tells you like how to get all the important things, like where to authenticate, where to validate your tokens, where to check whether certificates have been revoked, that kind of stuff, right?
Yep. Yeah, yeah.
So we're all across all this. Now, why is that different from cookies and why does it matter? Because it's stateless. And what that means is if you go and log in to a website, you go and log in on that website, right? Mm-hmm. But a single page application is not really a website. It runs in your browser, not on a back end.
Right.
So that fundamentally is the problem, yep. Right? So that you can't make API requests to the same origin. Yeah, you can. It gets a bit messy. You can. Let's not say that. But you typically don't, right? So you typically would have your UI served from one origin or one URL.
Yep.
And that would be making API calls that need to be authenticated to a different origin. And that's why the cookie can't work.
Yep.
Because, yeah, and that's why we're using token. All with me so far?
Still with you, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Now, some things have changed over the past 5 or so years. More and more, the trend is away from single page applications. We are more and more leaning toward that not necessarily that not having been a good idea, but just why not just have your server-side rendering. Like, you know, if you take Blazor, for example, you've got two models. You've got Blazor WASM,
yeah.
And you've got Blazor Server. You've got, like, Razor Pages, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So why would you not, and especially given how compute is now cheap, especially in the cloud, like, if you're running your web server, your web app in the cloud, compute is not your cost bottleneck usually, right?
Yeah, sure. Yep.
Especially not for your UI. And especially if your full stack is big enough to be, you know, have load on it that starts to nudge the needle on pricing, the UI part is really where that cost goes.
Sure.
Plus you get like static rendering, you get server-side pre-rendering, you get better security. And I would still say better security, but I think the answer is easier security. But then I think if security is easier, that makes it better. So we are kind of leaning that way. That's one thing that changed. The other thing is, of course, just auth in general, you know, around passwords.
Sure. Yeah.
Now, let's take a step back for a moment, because sometimes you do need a standalone client like a mobile app.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you may still want a single page application or whatever the case may be. So those use cases still benefit from tokens. Now, if you go back 10 years, let's say you want to start a new full stack application and you're going to build a back end in .NET and you're going to build a UI in Angular and it needs to be secure. So you're going to probably use tokens, JWTs, no auth, no IDC.
Yep.
How do you do it? What do you do? Where do you start?
Okay, so you got two options.
Yeah.
One is a third party provider.
Yeah.
So
10 years ago, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, yep. Identity Server was around then.
Mm-hmm.
So Identity Server, Okta, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
And get them
Big difference between those two.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. But they can, in this instance, they can still serve the same purpose, right?
Yeah. But I was talking about, you know, even before that, right? So what's the first thing you do? The first thing you do is you create a new solution from a template.
Yes.
And you mentioned Identity Server, and Identity Server was in the template.
Yeah.
So the .NET team actually bundled Identity Server. If you wanted auth, right, when you went through the options that you could select in the template, your choices were, I think, no auth, Windows auth, single organization auth?
Yes.
Or multi-organization auth? I can't remember the exact details. But essentially you had like Windows auth, no auth. You had Identity Server, which came yep. baked in, into your API, not as another service running, but through the package import it ran within your API itself, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Or you had like the other option, which was basically Azure AD or Azure AD B2C, which they added on.
Yes.
Right. So, yeah. So Identity Server wasn't running as a separate package. It was running within your API. Now, why is this, right? So if you think about what you get in the base class library, you have a whole bunch of code in there that does things like JWTs,
mm-hmm.
right? What Identity Server gives you around that is OIDC compliance and standardization out of the box.
Yep.
And all of the logic for like issuing and validating tokens, managing secrets and certificates, all of that, like, you know, token refresh, email confirmation, all this. Actually, no, that comes out of ASP.NET Core Identity partially. So yeah, so like it's doing some things for you, right? But it, essentially, you know, you can plug it in. You don't need to have it as a standalone thing. Then, of course, later we found that they changed the license.
Mm-hmm.
And this was a major issue. And, you know, we've spoken about that. We had an episode, I think, maybe not an episode dedicated to this, but we certainly have spoken about it in the .NET licensing episodes.
Yes,
we have spoken about it. OSS ones. Yeah, yeah. So it had to come out of the template, right? So Microsoft can't bundle a non-open source package in the template. Now, the team decided to kind of really close ranks really on that in general, because the decision was, well, really, can we have any third party dependencies at all? Like, we can really only have first party. And that's why like Swagger, so mm-hmm. all the open API stuff is gone, and Microsoft just do their own now. Sorry, Swashbuckle, I should say, not Swagger.
Yeah.
So, you know, that like there's now the Microsoft first party. Actually, it was predates this by a long way, but in last week's episode, you mentioned Unity. So yep. Microsoft, of course, switched to their own DI container, which was just, sorry, they just rolled it into Microsoft.extensions.dependency injection. And that predates this. But yeah, so then we were left with the question, well, what do we do if we want auth in our apps, right?
Yes.
And especially with these full stack templates where you've got an API and a UI running separately, and the UI is a single page application, and the templates give us Angular, React, and for a time we had Blazor up in, you know, with .NET 7. .NET 8, we don't have that with Blazor anymore. But yeah, so we needed something else. So we already had ASP.NET Core Identity. That was built in, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you auth and user management.
Yes.
And is very
identity
good.
Management, yeah.
Yes. But it doesn't out the box issue tokens, validate them, rotate them, any of that stuff, do handle refresh. It's not OIDC compliant. So that's where you had Identity Server come in.
Uh-huh.
All right. So Identity Server's gone. So what do you do? Right. Well, you have choices, right? Now, if you think about what OIDC gives you, or if you think about what identity gives you, or if you think about like auth in general, you think about single sign-on, you think about all this stuff, it's like, well, okay, Microsoft's solution was you either don't have auth or you use Entra as your AD. Those were the options that you had, right? That's what they're going to give you in the box. Now, you can swap Entra out for something else, like Okta was one option you mentioned.
Yep.
Identity Server running your own instance, Auth0. What else we got? Keycloak, whatever you want, right? You know, like OIDC providers, you know, we're not short of them. But if you think about it, right, OIDC is giving you effectively single sign-on. It's a single shared identity that you can use to access multiple different applications. But what if you just want one backend, one UI with its own auth, its own identity? If you want to provide single sign-on, you can already do like federation with Microsoft, Google, Apple. In fact, there's this library. It's called ASP.NET Core, ASP.NET.auth.providers. I can't remember the exact, I'll give you the link, but effectively it's a repo, and it's kind of community managed, but it's extensions for ASP.NET Core Identity that just wires up automatically for you all of the integration with any one of these providers. Right.
Yep.
And it's a massive list, like Apple, Google, Microsoft, GitHub, Twitter back then. Yep. Yeah. LinkedIn, all of the Chinese ones, like just take your pick. Like it's a buffet. You just cherry pick what you want. Right. Really, really cool. So why then do you need to create your own central identity server? And I don't mean identity server, the product. I mean your own central IDP. Maybe you do. Maybe you don't. But back to this scenario. Right. You're staring at file new. And you want a new application with a new backend and a new UI.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do, right? So you could go and wire up Entra Auth just for this one thing,
which is a pain in the ass.
Yep, and doesn't always make sense. And it, you know, like that's fine. Like it solves a lot of problems, brings its own set of problems. But again, like if you don't want to roll your own identity, and you want if you want people to log in from other sources, you can still do that anyway. So what we got with .NET 8. Was the identity API endpoints.
Mm-hmm.
So what these do, okay, so actually, let me take a step back. So back to OIDC and OAuth, right? There are a bunch of different grants. There are a bunch of different ways of obtaining a token, okay? So the first one, or the traditional one, is effectively you browse to the site of the identity provider, you enter your username and password, and that sends you back where you came from with an authorization code.
Yep.
That authorization code is exchanged for a token, right? And there's something called PKCE, which is basically makes the whole thing more secure. I won't go into the details now, but effectively your password is never given, your user's password is never given to what's called the relying party, right? The first party, your app. You never see your user's passwords. Your user's passwords go to the identity provider. You just get tokens. Okay, fine, right? But there's other grants as well. There's something called the client credentials grant, and that is where you authenticate with a persistent client secret or a certificate. And that's for machine-to-machine integration.
Yep.
And the reason that's kind of, and that's meant for private clients. So a public client, like a UI, is not...
Or a mobile app.
A mobile app is a UI?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's not an appropriate place to ship a client secret and store it, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, like an API that's calling another API might be. You can store it in Key Vault and what have you. So you got the client credentials grant. You've got the device code authorization grant. That's the one where you authenticate somewhere else and you enter a code. And then, so let's say you want to sign into Netflix on your TV.
Yep.
It says on another device, go to here and log in and enter this code. And then your TV is continually pinging Netflix with, so it's showing you one code. It's got another code of its own. It's, you know, the device code, and it's pinging back to Netflix and saying, has this code been authorized? And it does that every X seconds until it comes back and says, yep, here's your token, right? So that's also how, like, the Azure CLI works. And sorry, go on.
No, I was just agreeing.
Yeah. Okay. So there is another one, or there was another one called ROPC, which is the resource owner. I can't remember what the PC stands for. Let me just look this up. It's the resource owner.
Password credential.
Resource owner password credentials.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's the ROPC grant. Now, the ROPC grant is deprecated because it's not considered secure. So it is considered that you should not do this because it's not secure. Now, the way that the ROPC grant works is that your UI does see the username and password. That is effectively where you send the username and password to an API endpoint to authenticate, rather than doing it, letting the identity provider handle it all itself.
Really, that's not secure.
Isn't it?
By definition.
Yeah.
Because you're giving me your password for me to then pass that on to the identity provider.
What if you are the identity provider? Like, that was always the argument for it. Like, what if it's a, like back in the single app scenario we described, where identity server is actually built into your UI, it's into your backend, sorry. It's not a separate identity provider. It's just an identity provider running out of your backend on top of ASP.NET Core identity, just to give you convenience and sugarcoating around your token issuing and all that sort of stuff. Is it still not secure?
I guess it is. I mean, it's still as technically insecure as it ever was, but practically speaking, no. I mean, it's within the same organization, right? You're within the same.
Let's put it this way. We've removed the objection that you are intercepting the credentials between a user and an identity provider that you have no business seeing.
Correct.
We've at least removed that argument, right?
Yeah.
Now, you know, are there other concerns about sending the username and password over the wire? Maybe. Don't know, right? But they are separate. The reason I ask is because the identity API endpoints that shipped in .NET 8, that's what they do, right? So
yeah.
They don't use JWT. So JWT so OAuth is not prescriptive about what kind of token you use. OIDC is. And the type of token that OIDC prescribes is JWT, JSON Web Token.
Mm-hmm.
It's not encrypted, so it's human readable. You can read it. It's made up of three sections, and the first two are JSON. The first one is a header block. The second one is a payload, and the third one is the signature.
Yep.
So the signature is anti-tamper. You can verify that it was the token that you're looking at was signed with the certificate that's provided by the identity provider that you trust.
Yep.
And the payload, so the header contains some administrative information about the token, and the payload contains what we call claims, key value pairs, basically. In a token, in a JWT, they're called claims. And that's information that is provided about whatever you want, right? The user, the identity provider. I mean,
it's usually a claim on that identity by that provider. So the first name, like, that's where you can get the true, or you can get the claim of the user's first name, last name, email address.
It's funny you should say that, because I'm going to come back to that as well, right? Okay. So there's different kinds of tokens, right? There's identity tokens that gives you information about the user, and there's access tokens. And access tokens are intended to be passed to your back end, right?
Yep.
And historically, we've done a thing called token enrichment, where we grab information about the user and we put it in the token. And if that's information that's stored by your identity provider, they just write it into the token, you know, configurable. If it's not, then we wire up some Rube Goldberg machines to make an API call during authentication to get information from other systems.
Yep.
And that's one of the other things that's changed, is we all kind of sort of said, that's not really a good idea. Like, I mean, it's still a practice that you still see, but by and large, people are starting to say, why are we doing that? Like, your application is the source of truth for information about that user, unless it's not, right? But that's a different scenario. So, but the situation where we're doing round trips, like circular calls, where your identity provider calls your back end to put information about the user into the token, which goes to your front end, which gets sent to your back end. Like,
I think that's more of an abuse of the system rather than what the system was designed for.
Absolutely. But it became quite, I don't know if ubiquitous is the right word. Maybe it's certainly more
common.
Of a correct word than prevalent. But yeah, common. It was common. You saw it a lot, right? But in that case, you know, we're better off, and this is what I do now, is you're better off on login, just call the back end and say, give me information about this user that I need in the UI. Like, it's like a, you know, you call a get my profile or whatever.
Yes. And this is something that's confused me quite a bit, and I think you helped clarify it a while back, but it's understanding this concept of identity.
Yeah.
And what does identity mean?
Yeah.
And basically that being a user is not, like, there's a separation between user and identity.
Yeah.
And there are properties that belong at the user level, and there are properties that belong at the identity level.
Yeah.
And yes, they should be separate.
Yeah.
Right. And in that case, yes, the identity is, who am I? And that's basically it.
Yes.
I am.
Yeah.
This is who I am. And that's really all that the identity provider should be able to, or I should be getting from the identity provider. Yeah. Everything else around me as a user on your system should be stored internally to your system, not within the identity provider.
Yes. Agreed. Yeah. Yeah. And in some cases, yeah. Yes. Agreed. I just want to go back though. So back to the .NET API. Identity API endpoints, right? So you've now got these endpoints that you can, they're not turned on by default, but you know, you wire them up in your host builder. And yeah, they effectively give you an API endpoint that lets you send a username and password and get a token back. Now, it's not a JWT, it's opaque. Unlike JWTs, which we just described,
you can't
see what's in it. It's proprietary and it's opaque. It does also give you a refresh token. But refresh tokens have always been opaque. You've never been able to pass those. Yeah, and you know, you can sign in using the username and password over an API call. Given that it's your back end and your front end, like, you know, we've removed the argument against that. We've removed the part where we're saying you now intercepting a username and password. You get token, you can do your refresh. Okay, great. What's the problem then? So this is now the default. If you want to, I mean, it's not the default. You still have to do it. Like, it's not. There are no templates where it's all set up for you out the box.
Yeah.
But the guidance from Microsoft now is this scenario that we're describing, single app, back end, front end, you own it all. You don't want external identity at all. You don't want to use Entra. This is what they say you do. There are plenty of people saying they don't like it because it's just the ROPC grant. And there are some shortcomings with it as well, right? Now, I have had on my backlog for about a year a little project that I've been working on and I keep coming back to, where I wanted to say, what if, because, like, here's the problem, right? In fact, let me tell you my specific problem, my specific scenario.
Yeah.
I have a website called MauiWorkshop.org.
Yep.
It's Razor Pages.
Yep.
It uses ASP.NET Core Identity, uses that the library I mentioned earlier about the identity providers, and it's wired up to Google, Apple, and Microsoft.
Yep.
About 5% of my users use the built-in email sign-up, and about 95% of my users use Apple, Microsoft, or Google.
Yeah.
And all's well and good. Like, you know, great. Completely serves my purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have a problem.
What's that?
I want to add a mobile app.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say I turn on the identity APIs. All of my users that use username and password can now log in with the mobile app.
Yeah.
But what do my users who use Apple, Microsoft, or Google do? They're stuck. So I started thinking about it, and I sketched out in detail, like, I kind of came up with quite a full spec, and I sketched out a lot, right? And I had some big ideas, right? So I was like, I'm going to create this package, and it's going to be called Single App Auth, right? And what it's going to do is effectively solve this problem. It's going to probably use something like OpenEdict. Do you know what that is?
I've come across it, but no.
Refresh
me for the benefit of our listeners.
Yeah. It's another open source OIDC implementation in .NET.
Yep.
But it's you could think of it as headless, right? So unlike Identity Server, which gives you the full solution, it just gives you the parts that Microsoft don't. And you have to wire it together yourself and build an actual. It's more like, if you think about Identity Server as an identity provider that you can customize,
Yep.
OpenIDICT is like an engine that you can use to build your own identity provider. So yeah, don't worry too much about the specifics of that. But like, the when we said right at the start, like, you've got some things in the base class library for handling tokens, but yeah, then there's some hard parts. Like, it does the hard parts.
Yeah, okay.
Right. So I thought, okay, so I'll wire in that and I'll have some extension methods. And what I'll do is basically give you back OIDC, but just hosted by your own backend. I'll use the built-in ASP.NET Core identity that you've got for signing in. You can plug into third-party providers if you want, but I will support a redirect back to another URL that's configured where you can return a code and then exchange that code for a token. And then I started thinking, well, I'm getting closer and closer to basically re-implementing the whole of OIDC and OAuth. And then I thought, what are some things that I could improve upon? Well, sorry, that's not a fair way of saying it. What are some things that I would do differently to the way that Identity Server does them? And specifically, Identity Server is extensible through a bunch of interfaces, right? So you can implement your own interfaces. They've got their own defaults out of the box, but you can implement your own interfaces, and that's the extensibility point.
Yeah.
And the way that you do that is, you know, you that lets you do things like enrich the token, various other things, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, is that how I would do it? And I kind of thought, no, it's not, right? The way that I would do it is with middleware, is I would have a bunch of handlers, and I would probably have an authentication context, and it would work the same way that middleware does, where it's FILO, first in, last out. So you effectively define your own handlers, and you declare them in the order that you want them processed. And then during the login authentication process, it will handle your it will run through your handlers on the way in, and then the same on the way back out. So same as like a mediator pipeline or an HTTP request pipeline, middleware, what have you, right?
Yeah.
And then I would do the same thing again for token issuance. So I'd have a token issuance context. And I got really excited, and I've been coming back to this on and off for about a year, and just carving out bits, more bits of it here and there. And then this week I stopped and I threw the whole thing in the bin.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
Because it's been done elsewhere, or because you realize you're going down the wrong path?
I realized I was going down the wrong path.
Yeah.
Like, every single requirement that it serves, I either don't need, or we kind of say, don't do that. So like, let's think back to my scenario. I've got my backend. I've got my Razor Pages app, my web app that works. I want mobile users to be able to authenticate. The ones that use the username and password that's in my system, they can do that over the identity APIs.
Yeah.
But the problem that I have is, how do the Apple and Microsoft ones do it? So
yeah,
I could build my own logic to issue tokens, and, you know, not just full re-implement OIDC, but the more I try and make it even remotely work, the more I'm finding that the dependency is that I basically do need to do that, to the point where I may as well use something like OpenIDICT, right? So I would have to build logic into the identity pages that I've scaffolded in my UI for my web app so that they would support redirecting to another client.
Yeah.
Then there was things like the token enrichment and all the other stuff that but we've now said that that's not useful because it's not the best way to do it. And like, every other kind of use case and every other kind of value proposition, effectively, I just redlined them all. Like, I went through them and I was like, it just doesn't survive. And you know what I realized? I realized that I was thinking about it wrong, and that's why, right? So back, if thinking back to 10 years, and back like 10 years ago, and I don't know if you were, you weren't like doing mobile apps back then, but I don't know if you're doing this with single page applications or what have you. But the way that it used to work, before we had this idea that you would have one identity provider and that would delegate to all your different external OIDC or social auth, social login providers, we used to just do it all ourselves. Like, this is the thing, 10 years ago, we used to, like, you know, we say don't roll your own auth, like don't build your own auth because it's super scary and, like, you know, it's super dangerous. But we always did. And the way that we did it was, you would just do what I described, but in your UI. So your back end is now already set up to trust tokens from Google, Apple and Microsoft. Like, I've literally already set that up, because what happens when a user clicks login with Microsoft, it's just redirecting them to Microsoft or Apple or whatever you choose, coming back to my API, coming back to my web app and saying, here's a token now from Google that now I trust anyway, right?
Yeah.
We just used to do it in the UI. Instead of having the UI say, here is where your backend authenticates, now you must choose from your back, excuse me, from your login web page that's hosted somewhere else. Log in with Microsoft, log in with Google, log in with Apple. We used to just have it in the UI. Like your UI would say username and password, or log in with Facebook, log in with whatever, right?
Hmm.
You put in your username and password, that sends it to your back end. You click log in with Facebook, that takes you to, that does the redirect in the UI, not via your back end. You go to Facebook, or you go to Microsoft, you go to Google, you do your authentication. This all happens in your UI. Your UI now has a token from Google that now calls your back end. Your back end already trusts that. It's literally how we do it. We all just forgot. Like, it's how we did it for years. And it's the simplest solution. And it's sitting there staring us right in the face. It's pretty trivial to set up. The hard part is literally already done, because I've already had to do it to support it for the web app. Like, that's the hardest part. And it's done already.
Yeah. So why haven't you done it?
I'm doing it now. Not right now, this second, but yeah, that's what I'm doing. Yeah. And it's like, this is the thing, is like, this isn't necessarily that whole everything old is new again thing, which is separate. It just struck me that it took me a year to come to the realization that I already know how to solve this problem, because it's literally the problem that we solved for years, until we all collectively decided that it was better to do it a different way, which maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. But then that doesn't mean that that's the only way to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, better is subjective. And to quote Liam Elliott, it depends.
It depends. Absolutely depends.
And so that's what I've been thinking this week. And that leads me to the broader question, which I want to put to you, that I alluded to earlier. What else have we just forgotten how to do?
Well, you mentioned early on about passwords.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Alternatives.
Yes. Yeah.
Because, like, we know passwords are shit.
Yeah.
Because now, to have a secure password, it needs to be 35 characters long, using God knows whatever combination of anything else, and can't be something that's used in the past or whatever else.
Yeah.
And rolled over every 35 days.
Yeah.
Because that's how frequently they seem to happen.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Right. And,
I'll come back to the 35 days thing, but yeah.
But, like, for the most part, for most websites that I sign up to that I don't really care about, or for most websites, I'll say it right now, I generally use the browser's suggest strong password.
Yep.
So it's always something random. I've got no idea what it is.
Yeah.
And I'll use the browser's password manager for the most part.
Yeah.
If it's a site that I don't give a shit about. Now, if I jump onto that site on a machine that's not mine or in a different browser or whatever else, I just do a reset password.
Yep.
Right? There's no cost involved in resetting your password.
Yep.
So what's the point of having the password?
Yep.
Right? 9 times out of 10, every time I sign in, I'm clicking a I forgot my password button.
Yep. Okay. So look, you're right. And this is what everyone else has settled on. So one thing that, you know, we all quite like now is passkeys.
Yeah.
And that's quite a neat way of doing it. And I've got a whole talk on how that works that I did a few years ago, and a sample repo. I'm sure you've seen it, or we've spoken about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's all changed now as well, because I'll come back to that. No, I'll cover that one now. So I showed there basically how to do it yourself using a third-party NuGet package, plus wiring, adapting that to a database yourself, plus writing the JavaScript to do the attestation and assertion ceremonies in the browser. To you know, anyway, you don't have to do any of that anymore, because that's now built into ASP.NET Core Identity.
Yeah.
So, like, they give you that now for free.
Yeah.
So it literally does it all, which is great. .NET MAUI now supports it natively as well, which is cool.
Oh, cool.
As in, like, first party.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. So yeah. So passkeys. But then the other thing is that a lot of these solutions now, including like Auth0, ASP.NET Core Identity, I don't think does it out the box, but, like, you know, all the major identity providers can, and like, you know, if you want to do it yourself in identity, you can. But that's where it's passwordless auth, where you enter your email address and you get sent a one-time code.
Yeah.
And you log in with it, or you get sent a magic link and you log in with it. You don't enter a password ever, like, you know, which is quite cool. So yeah, you know, broadly, and like, obviously, if you do have to use a password, like, yes, use a password manager. The debate over whether that should be in your browser or something that you can own and secure is a separate debate. But by and large, the industry as a whole agrees with you and what you're doing. So yeah. Well, one thing I do want to talk about was you mentioned about changing your password every 35 days.
That was tongue in cheek, but it does certainly feel that way.
Yeah. So I remember I have a big folder full of research on this, as in, like, the academic research into the subject, because there was an ongoing debate around password rotation at a place I was working. And that's when we landed on, look, in fact, we used to show those tables that get published by Nest or whoever it is, where they show this is how long it takes to crack your password of lengths.
Yeah, yeah.
And we actually took the entire organization's security database. Oh, let's just say it was Active Directory. We took the org's AD database, stuck it out on a GPU-backed AWS instance, EC2 instance, and we cracked the whole thing with $20.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we put the limit at 10 characters, right? So every single 8 character password and below, 100%. And then it kind of fell off exponentially until like with 10, where we were getting like none, I think, or 12, I think it was none. So our argument was that we should have 20 character passwords, and that got negotiated down to 16 and then 12.
Yep.
But in terms of password rotation, what was really interesting was that the I'll never forget the research that says that basically it does more harm than good. So there are things called well-known transforms and well-known substitutions. So well-known substitutions are where you might put like an exclamation mark instead of an I.
Yep.
And transforms are where you might put a 1 at the end for January and a 2 at the end for February, for example. Right. And this is how people basically keep the same password and just do a transform on it. But the really interesting thing was that the point of changing your password frequently is that, okay, if your password is compromised, right, you know, if you change it, then okay, they don't have it anymore. Well, okay, but 30 days is a long freaking time, especially when you're talking about like exploitation of a compromised password.
Yeah.
And the research showed, and this would have been back in 2000, either the 2000s or the 2010s, I can find the article, but the research showed the frequency and speed with which a compromised password is exploited. To achieve the desired effect, you would need to rotate your password every 8 milliseconds.
Yeah, I can say that. And it's probably worse now.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And of course, you know, we've all got quantum computing to look forward to, but that's a whole other conversation. Yes. So yes, look, so passwords are out.
Yep.
I think the single app auth story is a lot easier than we potentially all believe it is right now. So I will finish what I'm doing, and I will publish a public open source demo showing how I do it.
Mm.
And I will invite criticism, and we'll see what happens. But yeah, I think it's an interesting problem, and I think it's a really interesting project that I've been thinking about, and I've decided not to do because I don't have the time for it and I don't need it, and every single one of its merits I just don't need and I just can't justify it.
Yeah.
And as I said, I think the thing that's really interesting was just that kind of realization when I sat there and thought, well, I actually already know how to solve this problem because this is how we always used to do it. And what I'm trying to do is solve the wrong problem. And yeah, and that was just when I sort of thought, and it just got me thinking, I wonder what else that we've all been conditioned to believe is too hard and we can't do, and it's too dangerous and too high risk, but we all know how to do it and we probably all could. We've just all forgotten.
And I think you'll find that there's a lot of things that fall into that bucket.
Yeah.
Right. And like you alluded to earlier, it's not, oh, here's what is old is new again. Like we've seen that. And like you said, you know, we went towards single page apps, and then now we're moving back towards server-side rendering.
Yeah.
Like wow, this is fancy. You mentioned that one in the past where was it Python writing SQL in the front end or something?
That was Next.js, yeah.
The Next.js, right?
Yeah.
what is old is new again, and, you know, without learning those lessons. But what you're talking about here is not that it's discovering what a new pattern that those have discovered in the past and kind of put to the side. It's more reminding yourself that it exists. And again, like when we spoke about the golden hammer way many moons back, right? We've got our habits. We've got the tools that we're used to using, and that's what we lean towards. And that's usually the first thing we pick up.
Yeah.
And then you forget, oh shit, there's actually something out there that would be 1,000 times easier and more appropriate.
Yeah.
But because it's not what you're used to doing and it's not common, you actually don't think about it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
So that's good to hear. And I'm sure I fall foul of a lot of those things too. I think everyone does.
Oh, yeah, I definitely do. Yeah. So that has been my week outside of everything else, outside of work and other commitments and family. And I'll admit, actually, it's not been my focus. My focus in terms of side projects has been something else, which I'm almost done with and I will be sharing soon, and which will be probably completely uninteresting to you, but is very exciting to me.
Fair enough.
Oh, you know, fuck it. I'm like, a week away from making this thing public. So I'll tell you now.
Well, this is Wednesday. This comes out on Wednesday, so you got 3 days.
Yeah. Maybe this can be the topic of our next episode. It's called Hyperwick, which is HTTP WYC when you can. And it's effectively a service worker inspired caching handler for HTTP client.
Say that again.
It's effectively a delegating handler for HTTP client.
Yeah.
And it's inspired by Service Worker, and it just basically handles inbound and outbound caching for you. So it's trying to solve a specific problem, right? Which is mobile apps have this issue of needing quote unquote offline sync.
Yeah.
Right. And there are some good services. Well, there used to be something called Realm, which was part of MongoDB.
Yeah.
Which lets you sync your front end and your back end data, and it can work offline and then it syncs. There was Azure Mobile Apps,
mm-hmm.
which has now been replaced by Community Toolkit Data Sync. The problem with all of these approaches is that it requires you to architect your back end around your front end and around your sync, right? And it also assumes that you actually need conflict resolution, which most people don't, right? Most people need what Service Worker does, where it just says, okay, like you want to make an HTTP request, you're offline. Have you made that before? And have I got the results? And are those results still valid? If so, yep, here you go. Doesn't matter that you're offline. Here is the result from the cache. And the same thing with like if you try and make an outbound request and you're offline, just caches it, orders it so that when you're connected again, boom, 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 off they go. There's no conflict resolution. It's last one, last right wins. If you need conflict resolution, you do that on your back end or wherever. Like that's a separate thing. And if it's good enough for like billions of PWAs, it's good enough for us.
Yeah.
And it's certainly good enough for pretty much every mobile app that I've built where I've needed quote unquote offline sync. And it's a problem that I've just solved over and over again. And I realized I don't need to, because a completely agnostic just cache the inbound or outbound request when offline and replay it when you come back online pretty much solves like 19 out of 20, maybe even 99 out of 100 of scenarios, at least for me. So that's what I've been working on. It's not finished. I mean, it kind of is. Like, it works. It just doesn't yet handle binary payloads, which I expect to have done over the next week. And then, yeah, I will ship that. So, but yeah, we can talk about that more another time.
We can sync up with that offline.
And on that bombshell. So, what the view?
And did I mention it's Father's Day? It's Father's Day next weekend.
Yeah.
Bring the dad jokes out as make sure the dad jokes are flowing.
There's what the listeners can't see is that you're standing there holding an empty glass with this cheap dad joke grin, and I was just thinking, yeah, you've had enough. That's last orders. That's last drinks.
Last orders. That's it. Yes. Oh dear. So, don't know if there's much else to add.
No, I like be interesting to hear next time. If there's anything else you've thought of where you've just sort of thought, why the fuck are we doing this? That's too hard.
Look, that's not necessary. Yeah, I'm sure there is. I mean, I've been mucking around recently with just some little fun little side projects. And yeah, like the auth stuff and identity. And it's like, on one part, I was sitting there thinking, oh yeah, we'll just do intra external IDs.
Yeah.
And then about a half a day later, you're just like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
ASP.NET ID, like let's just do internal identities. Like we don't need all that extra headache and overhead.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. I mean, maybe this is another topic entirely. Is like how, when, and why do you pick different identity providers and solutions?
Well, the answer is basically how much money do you have and how much do you hate life?
Life.
But no, like, do you need an identity provider? Most of the time, no.
I think, agreed. And I think the point I was trying to make earlier that I forgot to close the loop on is this, right? When we say auth is scary, auth is hard, auth is dangerous, don't roll your own. I would agree with that, except for the fact that the dangerous, scary, hard parts are already done for you. And they're in the base class library, mostly.
And when we say don't roll your own, that's the stuff we're saying don't roll your own of.
Yeah. Yeah. Like don't write your own password hashing algorithm.
Yeah.
And password validation algorithm. Don't write your own, you know, security layer transport layer security, sorry. You know, don't do that stuff, but you don't have to. Like that's the hard parts, the dangerous parts are done. The parts that you would need to do that you wrap around it, we've conflated with the parts that you shouldn't do and you can. And I encourage you I'm going to get like so held responsible for all of the breaches because people are just going to go out and start doing crazy shit. But
well, no, because, okay, the stuff out of the box just works. Like, you've got to configure it poorly for it to fail you.
Yeah.
The breach is not going to be coming through your identity system in that instance. It's going to be through other mechanisms that you've left the doors open on your Azure instance, or like, you haven't secured other things down.
Yep.
Right. The identity is going to be pretty secure.
Yep.
And again, like you said, we're not building our own hashing algorithms. So even if someone gets into that database, like we're not storing passwords.
Yeah. Exactly. And we're not building our own cookie issuing system or validation system.
So, like, for the most part, I think you don't need to put that caveat there. Like, around the rest of the ecosystem around what you deploy, well, that's your problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Yeah.
Okay. Well, like you said, Matt, my glass is empty and don't know if you caught it, but I'm yawning and I am ready for bed.
Yeah. Fair enough. Well, you need your sleep with all those 30K runs.
30K. Oh, yeah. It's quiet week this week, but we've got 30K on the weekend. So it should be fun. Hopefully the weather's good. And then Father's Day.
Mm-hmm.
You got anything? Anything big? Anything exciting?
Nah. Quiet one at home with the family. I haven't told them yet, but we're going to get Indian takeout because that's my annual birthday tradition and we didn't do it this year. So we're doing it for Father's Day.
Nice.
That's it. And that's the plan.
Nice, nice, nice. Yeah, I know. I was asked, well, what do you want to do for Father's Day? Like, nothing.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay, Matt. Well, I think that's it for this episode of the Beer Driven Devs. I'm Liam Elliott.
I'm Matt Goldman.
Cheers.
Cheers.
The Beer Driven Devs podcast is recorded and produced on Dharawal and Darkinjung land.
Stop the recording. What time is it? 8:40.
I'm fucking tired.